Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying. So welcome back, everyone. Today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Ali Karagozian. She is an occupational therapist who works with parents in fertility health, specifically those who are experiencing secondary fertility. She currently lives in Chicago with her husband, Michael, and their two sons. Ali earned her undergraduate degree in psychology and her master's degree in occupational therapy from Grand Valley State University in West Michigan. She has worked for the past 7 years as an occupational therapist in Chicago, where she began her career at a community hospital on the south side of the city, working in a behavioral health unit. In an inpatient rehabilitation unit. For the past 6 years, she's worked in a large academic medical center in the inpatient rehabilitation and acute care settings. Her passion within her field has been in promoting health literacy. Ali is the founder of Holding Both, a business created to support women experiencing secondary infertility through one-on-one support, group sessions, and community building. Ali has experienced infertility during motherhood herself and sees great opportunity to be of support by helping women identify the unique barriers that they may face during the process. Ali knows that there is complexity in holding both the joys of parenting and the pain of infertility at the same time. She plans to launch her podcast in June of this year. And without further ado, I'd like to present to you Ali Karagozian. Welcome, Ali.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I'm thrilled to have you on and to learn more about your specialty. I'd love for you to tell us a little bit more about your background, a little bit about you.
All right. So I, as you said, have been working as an occupational therapist in Chicago over the past 7 years, and I've learned a lot. I currently work in the hospitals. And when I had my second son, I decided to go part-time and to become an entrepreneur as well. After having each of my children, I shifted my career a little bit. And my second son was conceived via IVF. So I experienced infertility with him, and that fueled my passion to help individuals navigate through secondary infertility in a way that isn't as painful as what I felt when I was going through it.
Got it. So it's so, when you and I first connected, it was actually the first time I'd ever heard of secondary infertility. Do you mind describing that to some of our listeners before we go any further?
Of course. So with infertility, there's primary infertility, and that is when a couple has tried to conceive a child for a year plus without success of a natural pregnancy or spontaneous conception and seek out treatment. Secondary infertility occurs when a couple has had no issues the first time conceiving and then goes to conceive a second child or third child and runs into infertility. So for me, I experienced primary infertility twice. So I split it up. So at Holding Both, I support parents that are experiencing what I say is infertility during motherhood. So whether that's you experience primary infertility the first time and you're going to try to have a second or third, but you're coming up against infertility, or experiencing true secondary infertility where you had no issues before and are having difficulty achieving a subsequent pregnancy. So what I experienced wasn't true secondary infertility, it was primary infertility the second time. So I support those individuals as well. But I found that there was a gap in secondary infertility support where people often feel blindsided. So yes. I wanted to step in and be that.
Does that also intertwine with what motivated you to contribute to the podcast?
Yes, definitely. I think secondary infertility is very misunderstood. And then I also think that occupational therapy within this space isn't something that's tapped into as much. So I wanted to be on the podcast to be able to share what occupational therapists can do in this infertility space.
Yes. I'm so excited to hear more. This might be a great way for us to segue into that. Can you describe for us a little bit more about the uncommon OT work that you do? Perhaps, you know, the setting in which you practice, the clients or the folks that you serve, and some of the goals that maybe you work on with people.
Yes. So everything is virtual right now. So I meet with my clients over Zoom. So I do one-to-one sessions, and in those sessions, we really get into what the barriers that you're experiencing are. With secondary infertility, something that I really, really noticed was that secondary infertility almost feels like someone threw a hand grenade into your IADLs. So for anybody that's listening that doesn't know what IADLs are, your instrumental activities of daily living. So things like managing your finances, managing your household, childcare, you know, anything related to that, I felt like was, in my experience, disrupted by infertility, especially when I was trying to parent and trying to navigate this at the same time. Yeah. So in the one-to-one sessions, we really unpack what are the biggest barriers to you living your everyday life while you're parenting and going through infertility. In the group sessions, I have 4 to 5 members in our group, and each week we talk about something different. And the group sessions have been very, very rewarding. I really like to see the community building and the connections that are made.
Yeah. What kinds of topics do you cover during groups?
During groups, it varies. I start with a topic, and then I let the group members navigate it as it goes. At the beginning of each month or at the beginning of the group sessions, everybody takes turns saying where they're at in their journey and talking about their parenthood, their experiences with parenthood as well, because secondary infertility is very much like my business name, Holding Both, holding your parenting and the joys of that, and then the infertility experience. So in the group sessions, we start out by talking about what everybody's comfortable with in terms of sharing their experience with that. And then each week, like I said, we have a different topic. So some of the topics might be, what are the logistical barriers that you've run into recently with going through infertility, or talking about the more technical things like medication management, another role OT does play. And in some of these interventions, especially in vitro fertilization, medication management is a big one because there's a lot of medication that people have to organize and take.
Yes. Got it. You're opening up my eyes here. It sounds like you're providing such a supportive space on so many different levels.
That's the goal.
Right? So Wonderful. Can you describe to us how did you evolve? I know you talked about your lived experience and your own personal struggles with fertility and that sort of inspiring you to do this type of work, or then identifying the need that, you know, there's not a whole lot of support out there for individuals like me. So aside from that being an inspiration and sort of helping lead you to this path, can you talk to us a little bit more about, I guess, just some specific things that you did, you know, coming from OT school, any types of additional training or specific experiences that you've had to try to kind of cultivate in order to be more ready for this current role?
Yeah, of course. I was able to draw back on some of my continuing ed that I did before this became a passion or an interest of mine. So a couple years before I started working at my current job, I got trained in pelvic floor therapy, which, as most OTs know, isn't always in our territory, but it's becoming more of our territory. Which and I felt like I learned a lot there. One thing that I can say specifically is I felt like knowledge of the pelvic floor therapy helped me prepare for the invasive testing that I had to undergo. And I feel like I can help my clients that I meet with by helping them prepare for the invasive testing using my knowledge through that. As you mentioned in my intro, health literacy has been one topic that I'm so passionate about. And I find that in the reproductive space, a lot of women or a lot of parents aren't as familiar with the questions they should be asking or with infertility. So I feel like that's a great opportunity to educate people and to teach people where to look to find the answers that they might need, as opposed to, and to ask the right questions or to go to their appointments feeling empowered. So learning more about promoting health literacy is another way that I use continuing education to strengthen my toolkit.
Yes. And I'm hearing a lot of OT there and everything that you said, just in terms of, you know, really identifying some needs, identifying where it is that the client might need you, right? They might need you at this particular place or junction where they're just learning about their conditions, learning about medications. And I think you having the OT lens makes you really well suited to identify where it is that the clients need you.
Yeah, I think as OTs, we have an opportunity to really be helpful in specific ways because our scope of practice is so broad. I think we can all take the reins on the certain continuing ed that's going to strengthen what we want to do. And I feel like it opens a lot of doors.
Yeah. Do you think you can tell us or give us an example of a typical session that you might have with someone?
Yeah. So in the typical one-to-one sessions, I always start off by explaining OT because I feel like that when we get our OT degree, it comes along with the knowledge. Well, I didn't know it at first that I'd be explaining my whole career what OT is. So I always make it very clear that I am not a psychotherapist, that I am an occupational therapist, and this is how it varies. I share the overlap in terms of the mental health support that I can provide, and also educate them on how to seek out a therapist if they do find themselves needing psychotherapy from someone that's licensed to be able to do that. And then I talk about the other logistical things that are within our scope of practice and what we can talk about in the session. And then I also tell them, and then we lead into them telling me what they feel comfortable with in terms of their stories. So a lot of times I find in the one-to-one sessions that this is the first time someone has opened up about their infertility to the extent that they do outside of their friends and family. So yeah. It feels like an honor to be able to hold that space. And then we talk about, like I said, the logistical barriers, what treatments they have coming up. I can help them ask questions or help them come up with questions to ask if they need that, help them direct them to resources that are going to help them outside of what I can help with. So it's pretty comprehensive. The first session that I meet with someone is typically 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I always tell them that the sessions are 90 minutes. If we go over, that's okay too, because I find that there's a lot to unpack in the first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then with subsequent one-to-one sessions, I give them the option to do half-hour sessions or an hour session. And the subsequent sessions are more so following up with what might have happened in their treatments that they've gone through, or if they're having questions about next steps, giving them ideas. So the subsequent sessions they vary in what we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So the 90-minute session is typically like your initial assessment.
Yes.
Are there any specific tools that you use to gather your information?
No, actually, but that's something that I want to look into, because I know there's so many different tools that we can use. I've been thinking about looking into like a standardized health literacy assessment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be really valuable to use in the initial session. Yeah. But other than that, no, not yet.
Wonderful. I'm just thinking maybe the COPM right away might be a good one to use, and just because it can go. It's one that you can take to you can take it anywhere. Basically, it could work with any goal. So interesting. Okay. And then after that, after the 90-minute sort of initial assessment, each session afterwards could be either 30 to 45 or 30 minutes to an hour. And that's really where you're working on the goals, right? Because goals are set during the 90-minute session, and then you're really looking at progress, lack thereof, et cetera, moving forward. And typically how many sessions does a typical client usually have with you?
So I would say it's short, 3 or 4. Feel like giving someone the tools they need, they're able to launch, I guess, or navigate their own way after that. The group sessions, though, that everybody, so I started off with 4 members, and the group I try to keep 4 to 5, and the group sessions I found that the people that are meeting with me stay for a little bit longer, because the camaraderie of the group I think is very helpful through the ups and downs of infertility.
I like that there's that flexibility there too, because it's a small group, so it's pretty intimate.
Yes, I love keeping it small. Initially I was going to do 6. And then the way that things worked out, before I started my first group in February, I had 2 people drop out right before. And so once I ended up meeting and I ended up seeing what the dynamics of 4 was like,
mm-hmm.
I really liked that. Like I said, I'm open to opening up to 5, but I think that's the highest I'll go, just because I really like the intimacy of the small groups.
Yeah. Now, where do you get your referrals?
You know, it's very interesting. So most of the most of the clients that I've met with said that they found me on Instagram through the hashtag secondary infertility.
Interesting. So
that was amazing to me. I do have a website, but I would say most people have found me on Instagram.
Okay, interesting, huh?
I find that to be a very powerful tool.
Yeah, and sort of the least expected in this, I would imagine, in this specialty, just because I always find that I always think that maybe a referral from another or sort of a word of mouth would be your most popular way of getting your referrals. But I guess Instagram is just a different version of that.
Yeah.
Ah, that's great. So hashtags, right?
Yeah. It's one of the last things I would have expected, but it's really been kind of a powerful thing because I've had multiple people tell me that they turned to Instagram and looked up secondary infertility because they were just not finding anything specific in terms of fertility resources or support, looking elsewhere, and they come to Instagram. So Instagram isn't something that I used to seek out support during my first time experiencing infertility, but my second time I did. And so I think it's such a opportunity to have the free resource of Instagram to help people direct them to me.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. So referrals are coming from those sources. Any other sources aside from Instagram?
Word of mouth, my website, and then Instagram. And then in terms of referrals, so all of my services that I provide are private pay right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest barriers with infertility care is that insurance does not cover infertility care in many states. So a lot of the interventions, the medicated cycles, the IUIs, IVF, most of the people that I work with have to pay completely out of pocket for that.
Yeah.
And so occupational therapy, especially in this space, there's no chance that it would be covered at this time. So one of the things that I have found that's been really powerful is that these people are seeking out this type of support and willing to private pay. So I try to keep my rates reasonable because I know that fine balance of me running a business and definitely needing to have the funds to keep a business going, but then also being sensitive to the fact that a lot of the people that I'm meeting with are paying high costs for the fertility treatment. So there's that balance there.
Yes.
I find that the holding both comes into play there because there's, I try to strike a balance and meet as much in the middle as I can there.
Yes. You ever offer any sliding scales or any types of discounts?
So I have not yet offered sliding scales, mostly just because full transparency, at the beginning of starting my business, I had to incur a lot of business expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm in that beginning stage where I'm trying to find that balance and also wanting to make a job for myself. So right now I don't, but I'm not, I'm definitely open to in the future.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing, you know, a little bit with us about, you know, salary and money matters and compensation, right? Like these are all such important, you know, pieces that our listeners are often wondering about, like how, you know, how does one, you know, charge for services? So currently it's completely private pay and it doesn't seem like insurance is, even something that you would even consider down the pike, right?
No.
But what's also important to, I think, highlight is that you have clients. You're not having difficulty finding clients.
Yeah, I think that the virtual, being able to connect virtually is really helpful for that.
Yeah.
And I think my husband and I have talked about this a lot. He's a psychotherapist. And in helping professions, sometimes it's hard to talk about the money piece of it, at least for me, because, you know, we are trained, we are board certified and we deserve to make a living, in whichever way we see fit. But I think sometimes in helping professions, it's hard to say that, we're in it to make money.
Yes.
Because I would be doing it no matter what, but also putting my time and effort and reframing the money mindset has been something
yes.
as an entrepreneur that's been a big hurdle for me.
Yeah.
But something I'm willing to keep working on as an entrepreneur.
Do you have any advice for any of our listeners who might be having the same struggles?
Yes. Value your time and the effort that you're putting in. I think that's the biggest thing, is that our time is worth so much and helpful. We have so much to offer, and to really take a step back and consider that.
Yes, couldn't agree anymore with that. Can you share with us some recent challenges and maybe some recent successes that you've had with your new role?
Yes, some recent challenges are in my new role is doing my taxes. I'm used to, as an OT, working in hospitals, having a W-2, and taxes have been pretty straightforward. Just navigating that for last year. So last year I didn't take on any clients, but I did file my LLC and I incurred a lot of business expenses that I referred to before. So navigating that, and I will, in full transparency, I'm not done with my taxes yet. I'm doing them right now, but that's been maybe a little bit of the not so fun side of entrepreneurship that.
Yes. I can completely relate, and I'm sure a ton of our other listeners are are also in the process of working on their taxes right now.
Yeah, it's been a learning curve for sure. And then some successes are when I see my Instagram following grow. I used to look at it as kind of a trivial thing, followers. In terms of, I want to connect with people that really want to connect with me, and it doesn't matter how many people do. But my Instagram growth, I found that it puts more eyes on what I'm doing, and it almost seems like it has a cascade kind of effect in a positive way. So just not being afraid to get myself out there and reach out to people and to grow has been such a positive thing recently.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I ran into a person that I made a connection with, who's become kind of a friend through all this, the infertility experience. I ran into her the other day at the store at Target, and she shared my account, and my account grew significantly with just that one connection. And so that felt good to just see that happen organically, is that her and I connected through a struggle that we were both having. Our sons were born at the same time. And then we met each other in person for the first time. And then she helped me grow a little bit. So,
fantastic. Really cool. What a great connection to have. And you know, just I guess in terms of, you know, affirming, right? And what an affirming encounter, just in terms of, you know, this is something you're passionate about, something that, again, you had personal experiences with it, then meeting somebody who also has the same needs, and then connecting you with others who can benefit from what you have to offer. I mean,
yeah, it was very special to run into her. And it was funny because we talked almost. She's not an OT, but she is in the infertility space. So it was amazing to talk to her. And we talked for 15 minutes about just everything kind of related to this. And it felt good to speak with someone that speaks my language in terms of this jargon with infertility and in this space. So it was really nice to connect.
Yeah. And the fact that they are not an OT, I think, can actually be a plus in a sense, right? Because here you are educating someone else about the value that you can, you know, what you can offer in this space, right? And it's sort of kind of collaborating and yeah, just exchanging notes.
Yeah. And she and I consider herself or her to be a huge advocate in the infertility community. She is outspoken about how she went through 10 rounds of IVF to receive her first child. And I think that a lot of people who don't have a straightforward path. Not that any path of infertility is straightforward, but for people who have a longer haul, I think that she really advocates and can relate to them. So
Interesting. Now I see why a podcast might be in the pike for you in June.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I have my podcast ideas flowing, and guests kind of, I have a couple guests lined up, and I'm really excited because it'll be different individuals sharing their secondary infertility stories. And something that I've heard a lot from people in my community is, sometimes it's helpful to see someone who's on quote unquote the other side of it, which, you know, me having two children, I consider myself to be on the other side of it right now, not to say that in the future I won't be back in the thick thing. But what I hear a lot is that it's helpful to hear from people who are in what's called the messy middle. I know an author, Glennon Doyle, talks about the messy middle, but so I've been having guest posts where people who are in the community share anonymously snippets and stories from what they're experiencing at this moment in time. So that's been really powerful because I feel like as OTs, we really value storytelling, and we really value the different perspectives that people have to offer. So that's been something new that I'm trying via Instagram, but then also taking it a step further on my podcast and having people share their stories.
I think that's going to be so impactful. And I think both, you know, really support each other, right? So now you have Instagram where folks can kind of just have, I look at Instagram as a place to really gain. There's a lot of information that's being passed around, right? There's a lot of education, actually, that I think a lot of educational information that's being circulated out there. And I'm imagining that to be on your Instagram account, and then you're following it up with conversations centered around those particular topics. I think they just really go hand in hand. In fact, the podcast needs to exist.
I'm so excited to launch it. I already have someone who's going to help me launch it and help teach me how to edit some episodes. I know you know the editing all too well.
Oh, I can help with that too, in my, you know, my in my level. But yeah. It's nothing that you cannot learn, trust me. And you know, in fact, it's more just, yeah, it's just like anything else that you have to learn. It's just a process, and once you learn that process, it just becomes automatic. And you know, I think just heard. From what I am sensing from you and the passion that you have and the commitment that you have to this topic, right, and creating a platform for it, I think that's also going to come across in your dialogues with your guests.
I think so too. I'm really excited because I think one of the things that will be eye-opening to people who are experiencing secondary infertility, but also for friends and family that may listen to it, is that every story looks so different. So some of the guests that I plan to have are people that have gone the surrogacy route, individuals who are same-sex couples that are trying to conceive their second child. So learning about what is called reciprocal IVF, and many different topics. So I'm really, I'm excited to get my guests on.
Exciting. This might be a really good segue. Are there any common myths or misconceptions that you'd like to demystify today about the current work that you do?
Yes. There's a couple things I think about, well, I don't know so much if it's a myth, but with secondary infertility, I think one of the misconceptions is that secondary infertility is when you're trying for your second child. But secondary infertility can also occur if you have no issues trying for your, or conceiving your first and second. And then if you're trying to conceive a third, it's also considered secondary infertility if you're having issues with that, if that makes sense. So
yes.
The other day I pulled my Instagram community And I asked how many of you, or, you know, I pulled to see if there was people in my community that were experiencing that, trying for a third and having difficulties. And I was blown away by the responses I got. It was really shocking to me. And I think in today's society, I would say on the whole, people who are in that spot trying for a third feel a little bit invisible, or that's some of the feedback that I got, because it's very common for people to have two children. And one of the stories that was really sad to me was one of my community members said that she has a son and a daughter, and people say, oh, because you have one of each, that you should just be happy. And one of the things that I value so much is the holding both. Just because you want to try to have another child doesn't mean that you aren't happy or aren't satisfied or aren't enjoying the children you have. So that was something that it broke my heart a little bit. But I think that where I'm at and the type of information I share can help to bring awareness to these things.
Yes. And I think this is where, again, your lived experience kind of really impacts a therapeutic relationship, right? And you having been in those shoes, it just really makes a big difference.
I think so too.
Yeah. So how do you, I know that a lot of his lived experience, you've done, you talked about having some pelvic floor background, a little bit of extra training as far as that is concerned. Is there anything else that you do to continue to learn and to be effective in your role? Yeah.
In terms of my continuing ed choices. So like I said, to the health literacy, but I like to focus on mental health continuing ed courses. So learning more about anxiety management in the occupational therapy space, or even getting more specific how the pandemic has impacted people's mental health, taking continuing ed courses specific to those type of things. So one thing that I will say is that the people that I've been meeting with have mentioned that the pandemic, going through infertility during the pandemic, has added a whole different dimension to, or a whole different level of challenge or a barrier. And so that's something that I feel like educating myself on more can be really helpful. Also, I went through infertility during the pandemic. So I do have that lived experience to be able to support people in that way too, because that added a whole different set of problems.
Yeah, I could only imagine. Are you finding that there's, is there any, or are there any OT and infertility research publications, literature out there?
It's limited. I do remember seeing on one of the Facebook groups that I'm part of, and I haven't been able to find it since, but it was a couple years ago. I saw an OT, I think it was in one of the women's health Facebook pages that I'm part of, had a course for OT's role in infertility. And I haven't been able to find that course. So if you're out there listening and this is you, email me. But I haven't seen too much about OT in the infertility space. So
Maybe there's opportunities there for you to create something.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that that there's lots of opportunities for anybody who's in women's health to learn more about infertility in this space.
Yeah. Well, on that note, do you have any career advice for any OT practitioner out there who is interested in following your path?
Yes. I would say some of my biggest advice is read a lot. So I think about my experience with infertility, and I've experienced my path through my infertility diagnosis, and just the specific interventions that I have gone through. But I realized that there's a lot more out there in terms of the infertility space that I wasn't aware of. So like I mentioned a little bit earlier, learning more about endometriosis is something that I've started to dive into. And it's actually Endometriosis Awareness Month. So I've seen a lot more resources on it. So anyway, someone who's just starting out in this space, I would say, learn about the different diagnoses, learn about the different diagnostic testing that each individual has to go through when they're first starting out their infertility interventions. And then when you're learning about the diagnostic testing, think about everything that might be involved in it. I think almost like an activity analysis that you learn in school.
Yeah.
So whether it be blood draws or whether it be more invasive testing, like when they test your, when they go in with the ultrasound, or when they test your, to see if your tubes are open or to see your uterine cavity, thinking about the tests in terms of what they are, but then also thinking about what the person might be experiencing when they are getting this type of test.
Yes.
So I think OTs are, OTs can really look at the broader picture. So I think that that's the opportunity we have, is that when we're learning, we can take a step back and think not only what are the technical parts of these different tests, but what are people experiencing mentally? What are they experiencing physically, emotionally? I think just taking a step back and examining that would be really great for someone just starting off in the space.
Yes. And seeing how it impacts their everyday.
And especially after some of the procedures and some of the tests, there is persistent discomfort throughout the day, like cramping or some bleeding. So of course, one of the caveats I say a lot to the people I meet with are, you know, I'm not going to give them any medical advice because I'm not a doctor and I'm not a nurse, but I also am able to tell them from what I know about the different tests, what they can expect in terms of cramping or something basic.
Yes. Oh, Allie, thank you so much for sharing with us your specialty and the details of the work that you do. I find it to be so fascinating. If any of our listeners were interested in reaching out, following you, is it okay if they stay in touch?
Yeah,
and how do they do so?
So you can find me on Instagram at holdingboth. HOLDINGBOTH. And then on email, I'm Allie, my first name, Allie, at holdingbothllc.com. And then if you want to look at my website, it's www.holdingbothllc.com.
Wonderful. And we will be sure to have all of your resources listed in our show notes.
Great.
And thank you again for sharing your wealth of information with us, the uncommon OT work that you do. I find it to be very special in the sense where, again, you're really tapping into a group of individuals whose need is not something that is necessarily out there, right? It's not broadcasted. It's not that folks are out there saying, yes, this is, you know, you always hear about folks wanting to conceive, but there's just so many other nuances and layers to it. And I think your OT lens is really well suited to identify what those are and to really support.
I think so too. And I think it's also important for me to say that when I was in the middle of it, I really didn't talk about it with anybody. So, I mean, close friends and family. And so when people find me on Instagram, a lot of times they haven't talked to many people about it. And I know I talked about that before. People might assume that because I have this platform that I was open about it before. And I wasn't.
Yes.
So I understand how that might feel if you're in the middle of it. And I always say I'm a safe space.
Oh, well, thank you so much again for sharing your journey with us, for sharing your much needed work. and for inspiring many occupational therapy practitioners out there who have a special interest in women's health, in parenting, or in infertility or fertility issues.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.